funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
Here are some sobering numbers. For every three children in Texas, one is overweight or obese. In Dallas, Tarrant, and Collin counties alone, more than 165,000 children suffer from asthma. Maybe your kids aren't among them. Maybe you don't even have kids. But make no mistake, children in poor health tend to do worse in school overall than their fitter classmates, which matters to their loved ones and doctors today, but will have consequences for the entire society within just a few years. This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. Tomorrow at SMU, my three guests will take part in a conference called Tipping the Scales for Children, From Ethics to Action to Well-Being. The idea is to encourage organizations devoted to childhood health to work together to document and address problems like asthma and obesity, and understand the sometimes surprising relationships between public policy and individual health. Peter Roberts is president for Population Health and Insurance Services at Children's Health System of Texas. Rita Kirk is director of the Carrie M. McGuire Center for Ethics and Public Responsibility at SMU. Douglas Hawthorne is founding CEO of Texas Health Resources and a member of the McGuire Center Advisory Board. Welcome, all of you, to Think.
Thank you.
I want to start with this. What is the case for a community's ethical obligation to address widespread health problems in a society that often values personal responsibility above community?
Rita. You know, sometimes there are institutional barriers that get in the way of individual choices. So we talk, for example, about food deserts in this city. And it's hard for us to imagine that there are places where people cannot go and get fresh fruits and vegetables because they don't have transportation. They don't have access to grocery stores that sell them. And it's easier, faster for them to get a 99-cent hamburger and feed it to their kids, regardless of whether the nutritional value is really there. So it's a systemic problem about how our society functions. And Peter, you and I have talked in a great conversation about kids who come in for treatment with asthma, and then they go back home to the very thing that caused those symptoms in the first place. So we're not really treating the whole child. And we think this is really an ethical responsibility of our community to decide that we're going to attack the big problems.
Thanks, Rita. This is Peter Roberts. These problems are what I would call wicked problems. They're very complex socially. No single organization, no single initiative is going to resolve them. So we believe, and the purpose of tomorrow's conference is to highlight healthy weight management, but then more importantly, to kick off a movement here in Dallas to try and make some headway on the statistics that you already cited, Chris, that half the kids in the Dallas school system are overweight or obese. There is an economic side of this as well. If we can't keep children in school, then first of all, the schools don't get paid for that day. Secondly, the child doesn't graduate. And third, we don't have a productive workforce, because these problems are chronic and progressive.
Doug Hawthorne, there are lots of health problems that we're concerned about in this society. Why the focus here on weight management and asthma?
Well, I think, Chris, because it is sort of the foundation for so many other illnesses that present themselves later on in life. And the opportunity that we have today, I think, is very unique in that, having had the privilege of being a part of hospitals and health systems in North Texas over the past 45 years, what we really have are not health systems, but sick care systems. We're caring for people who come to us with significant needs, whether they be children or adults. We care for those, figure out what's wrong, fix it, send them back out. The uniqueness of this conference and what will go forward is, why do they get sick? What are the causes that we can help create so that we can have a healthier community? And it's not just about health. It is about well-being. You notice that term in our title. It's more than just the health of an individual. It's their whole existence.
What have we learned from the problems that have persisted over time, despite the fact that numerous organizations have tried to tackle both of the problems we're talking about today?
You know, we have a lot of organizations that are out there, and KERA is among them. your curriculum that you have posted on your website even today that's called Little Bites, Big Steps is an excellent example of the kinds of resources that are available in our community. So there are these great silos of information and repositories of resources for children and for families to look at. But if you're the average person out there, where do you turn? What do you do? The other thing that we realized as we started developing this conference is that a lot of the people that have been working on this issue have never been working with each other. So part of it is just to try to end the duplication of our processes and services and have all of the people in the room at the same time. And so I hope some of your listeners today say, I'm one of those people. I need to be at that conference, and we hope that you'll join us tomorrow.
So it's like being a great big needle and thread that we hope we can be as we bring the pieces together that really impact health and well-being in our community. And as Rita said, we have lots of them, and they're quality, and they're doing great work. But they're verticals. How do we turn all of this on its side, create something that's horizontal that truly can be a coordination of effort rather than a lot of individual pieces doing their own thing?
We had some success here in Dallas with asthma, as you know, Chris, the Health and Wellness Alliance for Children, which is an organization comprised of more than 75 different organizations and individuals from the health sector, from government, philanthropy, from churches and schools. And we took on the issue at that time was asthma. And we focused for the last 4 years on what could we do together. As Rita and Doug said, it's not for lack of resources in Dallas. We are resource rich, but we are coordination poor. And we were able to at least begin to move the needle on childhood asthma and make a small difference in what was the utilization of the emergency room by children who have asthma. We actually cut that in half. So this is a community-wide success. We cut it in half.
Despite the fact that more children in this part of the country have been diagnosed with asthma in recent months.
Absolutely. Because as Doug pointed out, it's not a medical problem. It's the social, behavioral, and environmental determinants that comprise more than 70 to 80% of the influence on our health. And so we need a complex solution that's much more collaborative and brings people together, as Rita said.
What's the relationship between poverty and asthma?
We think it's huge. In part because some of the very things that would create problems, medical problems, are in the environment. And so we send them right back into the environments that created those in the first place.
You're talking about substandard housing.
Substandard housing, the molds, the lack of proper ventilation in rooms, even as we get into other issues like lead-based paints that are often involved in those buildings and create medical issues. So poverty is a huge thing. The other part is, poverty leads to all kinds of insecurities. There's the insecurity of not knowing where you're going to stay next month or what you're going to eat the next meal. So those insecurity things take children's minds away from their studies and from things that normal kids would be thinking about. And instead, they're worried. They're scared.
And poverty, I think, also creates the issue of people not addressing the issue and coming to a facility or a physician because they don't have the means. And typically then when we see them, whether it's in a physician office or in an emergency room, their state of health has changed dramatically to a very acute stage. And therefore, the cost, the amount of time necessary to help improve their well-being and health takes much longer. So there are other issues related here in terms of the fact that people come too late sometimes for their care. And many reasons they do come too late is because of the economic situation they're in.
So, in other words, if it's really expensive to go get care, people are going to put it off until they really feel like their child is in dire straits.
Happens every day. And we see it in our emergency rooms. That's why the emergency rooms of our hospitals and health systems across North Texas and across this country have become our front doors.
At the same time, We know that these problems can be resolved and can be solved. So we spent 4 years studying families because we think it is about families. And this conference is, it's not about individual children. It's about the family unit. And we studied families for 4 years here in the Dallas area. And we looked at those families that were thriving and those families that weren't thriving, both coming from the same neighborhoods, the same socioeconomic levels. So we discovered that it is possible to engage families and to put them in charge of their health so that they don't need to use the emergency room unnecessarily.
To help me understand this, Peter, what is the difference between a family that is thriving and a family next door that is not doing so well if socioeconomically, ethnically, education-wise, they're doing the same?
So we found a few dimensions that are important. One is connected knowledge about the resources in your community, not the fragmentation that Rita talked about earlier. Another is a sense of support, whether that be in your family or your extended family or your church. And so we have to use those trusted agents and organizations in order to reach families. Another is a sense of personal power. Do I feel each day when I get up like I'm just going to struggle my way through, or do I proactively plan so that I make the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and carrots and celery for my children, as opposed to just waiting until the last minute and rushing through the fast food line? So we know that there are characteristics of families that thrive, but we also know that those are not medical solutions, that we need to help raise families' level of independence and growth and development.
We also know that children who are active tend to be healthier children in general. And the Cooper Institute, who's one of our partners for this conference, is very much about getting students that are out there and active. And as you know, he's been pushing for a number of years, Dr. Cooper, the FitnessGram, and trying to get that through the Texas school system as a way of just measuring how much exercise do children get. And alarmingly, what we find out is that kids, on average, are not even getting 30 minutes of exercise a day. Well, I think when we were kids, you know, we were always out on our bikes or out playing, and if there was a stop sign, we had a race afoot. But I don't know that that's the condition that a lot of the kids live in today. It is, we have parks that are perhaps not as safe as we would like them to be, where our kids can't play unsupervised. We don't have good bike paths in many neighborhoods, particularly in the poorer areas of town, where they, again, are in a safe place to ride their bicycles and be active. So we need to do some institutional things that assist them in getting the kind of exercise they need, too.
I was surprised to read that there is a link between obesity and asthma. Do we understand how one might cause the other or vice versa?
Well, I think that it's common in among certain populations, certain neighborhoods, for chronic illnesses to be linked together just based upon the entire lifestyle. And so it doesn't surprise me at all that some of the same children have multiple chronic illnesses.
We're speaking this hour with Peter Roberts, who is President for Population Health and Insurance Services at Children's Health System of Texas. Douglas Hawthorne is founding CEO of Texas Health Resources and a member of the McGuire Center Advisory Board. And Rita Kirk is Director of the McGuire Center for Ethics and Public Responsibility. All will be taking part in a conference tomorrow at SMU called Tipping the Scales for Children, From Ethics to Action to Well-Being. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372. Email think@kera.org or find me on Twitter @ChrisBoydThink.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Summer Youth Program with hands-on workshops in game design, coding, robotics, visual arts, math, and language arts for students entering grades K through 12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is available at smu.edu/summeryouth.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. Tomorrow at SMU, there will be a conference called Tipping the Scales for Children, From Ethics to Action to Well-Being. It's about how organizations can work together to tackle problems, including childhood obesity and childhood asthma. Today, we're talking about that conference with three of the participants. Rita Kirk is director of the Carrie M. McGuire Center for Ethics and Public Responsibility. Peter Roberts is president for Population Health and Insurance Services at Children's Health System of Texas. And Douglas Hawthorne is founding CEO of Texas Health Resources. Okay, what does it mean for organizations to work together on these problems? What does, a community after school program have to do with a clinic? And what does a clinic have to do with a nutrition center? What does a nutrition center have to do with some other organization?
Let me give you just an example of one of the things that you're going to hear at the conference tomorrow. One of our speakers is the Reverend Michael Miner. When he was a pastor at a Baptist church in Mississippi, he found all kinds of issues with his congregants. There were times when they had to delay funerals because they had to order an extra large coffin. And we don't really think about those problems very much, but he was watching his population become sick with early onset diabetes. So he was the pastor that banned fried chicken from his social events after church, for which he made a lot of news. But one of the things that he talks about is the partnership that he formed with the mayor of his small town and how they work together. So tomorrow he's actually going to be speaking at lunch with our mayor to talk about what we're doing here in Dallas, again, to try to keep kids healthy.
Well, we found with the Health and Wellness Alliance for Children when we were in our asthma initiative was it was the uncommon partnerships that made the largest difference. And it was people crossing boundaries. I'll just give you one good example. We took the clinical guidelines for asthma and the asthma action plans, and we then took those to the city. And the city of Dallas worked with us so that we changed the housing code so that now child health is now a criteria for the housing inspectors to use as they inspect both multi- and single-family dwellings in the city. As Rita said earlier, that environment is so critical. Well, who would have thought a group of healthcare individuals and community service agencies would be working to change housing code and that that would have it, the impact that it did?
Partnerships and relationships are going to be critical, I think, for the success going forward. It's been remarkable how the transformation is taking place in hospitals and health systems across this country as they look beyond just the acute care stage of their responsibility. They're beginning to look left and right of the traditional hospital box to figure out why are people getting sick, why are they being injured, and how do we prevent people from using the hospital rather than just having it be there for any occasion. And so that in itself, in terms of a viewpoint, is going to change the relationships that we have with other organizations. More about prevention, more about education, more about opportunity to improve one's health. One of the partnerships that Texas Health Resources created was with Dan Buettner and the Blue Zones project. As a National Geographic Fellow, he has studied parts of the world where people are not just healthy, but their entire well-being has changed. And so Dan will be a keynote speaker for us tomorrow. He will bring his message in a provocative way, not to provide all the answers, but to stimulate and to get people thinking about what can we do in our communities to really make a difference, to look beyond just the traditional sick care model and really begin to look at health and well-being as a part of a way of life for all people, children especially. If it doesn't start there, it won't move into adulthood in later years.
How do you make sure that NGOs that in some cases might be competing for the same funding sources are all measuring according to the same standards? I mean, they all want to achieve maybe similar things, but they might be evaluating how they're doing and what they're doing according to different metrics. How do you convince everybody of the value of measuring together or by the same standards?
You know, I don't know that we're going to try to convince anybody to do anything differently than they're doing, but we're asking them to look for partnerships that can strengthen what they're doing. There's no doubt that there's sometimes when they're in competition with one another, but I have generally found that funders want to fund programs that have success metrics behind them. So the more success that you have, the more likely funders are going to come to you. We're also beginning to see this movement, not just in higher education like we do at SMU and the funding agencies that support hospitals, but they're wanting to see partnerships because you don't want to rely on one set of people and the organizational details that go behind that. You want to see that collaborative work. And I think what you really want to see is a city tackling this and being all in this together. You know, just as a perspective on this, today, 73% of all age-eligible kids cannot join the military because they are too unhealthy to do so. 73%, and that's just today. And then we look at what's coming down the pike with, as you were mentioning in your opening segment, about the number of kids that are overweight or obese and the number of diseases and illnesses that will be born from that. Right now, 45% of a small business's profits go to stimulate healthcare, to answer healthcare issues. So you're looking as a business person down the road at an unhealthy workforce coming straight at you. So if for no other reason, if we're not going to do it for the right thing just because we want happy and healthy kids, it's a business issue. It's a financial issue. I just think we have such a strong ethical responsibility to leave the world in better shape than it is today.
How do you educate populations about the dangers of obesity without stigmatizing individuals who are obese?
So we think that you start by listening very deeply to the families and then engage the families themselves in the process. In the past, as Doug has stated, the medical field has been pretty much a sick care system and has always had this this power struggle between the patient and the professional. But these problems are much more behavioral and complex, and who better to teach a family of a child who has a child that's obese or who has a child with asthma than another family that has tackled the same issue themselves? We have to stop thinking that we're the experts and we're going to do things to others or for others. But how do we engage them so that they start to take responsibility for their community or their block?
So what have you heard from those families who have maybe been through programs? What have they said about what really worked for them? And what have you maybe learned about what sounded like a great idea but wasn't as successful?
So I think, as Doug said, there are no point solutions. So stop throwing individual programs at families and start listening to them about what their needs are for well-being. Doug used that word earlier, and I think it's absolutely perfect. Families want a better life. They want better well-being for themselves. So we have to think of their health in that context. And if we're willing to address some of their financial, employment, housing, safety, those types of issues simultaneously because we work together, then that's when they become engaged.
We have an email here from Kim who says, regarding children not getting enough exercise these days, has anybody made the connection between the excess schoolwork and homework children are required to do with the decline of physical activity?
Well, certainly Dr. Cooper has been a big proponent of that for a number of years. And there are so many medical studies that are out there that indicate that children that are active study better, think better, respond better in the classroom. So even just 5 or 10 minutes in the middle of the day where the kids stand up and do something goofy to music, that makes a difference. And by the way, it makes a difference for adults as well. So there's all kinds of information out there that active kids do better.
Yeah. Children's Health right now is sponsoring a dynamic interactive program called Go Noodle in various school systems. And it's exactly what Rita said. It's a activity break, a brain break, for a few minutes periodically throughout the day. So the teachers put on Go Noodle, the class becomes very active, and then they settle down and get back into their studying. Sometimes it's not possible to have every school have a playground or a gymnasium. So we've got to think a little more creatively about how can we engage them in activity, perhaps without them leaving the classroom at all.
Great segue into when we started learning about Blue Zones, the instructors and the knowledgeable individuals would come and talk to large groups of folks from THR. And before they started their presentation, they asked if everyone would please stand up and feel free to move around while I'm talking. And so all of a sudden you see folks of all ages reluctantly standing away from their chairs, leaning on a chair, lifting a leg, lifting an arm. But the remarkable sense of comfort and energy that was created in the room, I think, is a good indication of the need that we have to not wait for just recess, as we used to call it, or playground, but to be able to do something inside the classroom. We'll hear from Dr. Michelle Kinder tomorrow from the Momentous Institute. Mm-hmm. I feel certain, as she talks about curriculum, she'll also talk about well-being from the standpoint of the full individual child's opportunity.
I actually have thought about the activity thing. Have you ever been to a conference and it lasts 6 or 8 hours, and by the end, you just, no matter how compelling the content, you can't wait to get out of there? And that's what we're expecting school children to do every single day.
Yeah. Every day. It just doesn't make any sense, does it? Mm-hmm. And particularly when we know that it increases their concentration. Your caller was concerned about how much homework they have. And I would also wonder, how do they do their homework? Do they have standing desks? Are there other ways for them to get exercise in between? So there's a lot of solutions to that. So again, to our point, there's not a single solution to this. It's about a lifestyle, a series of choices that we all get to make.
How are we doing with health insurance coverage for children in North Texas these days?
Better than the average nationally.
Really?
So, yeah, we're in it's not the children who have the most severe coverage problems in Texas. It's, as Doug knows, it's the adults who have more severe coverage problems. So we do have issues, but we, for the most part, are able to get kids enrolled in insurance coverage. I think the issue is more the disconnect between, if you think about the world of insurance and you think about the world of medical, they're very oriented towards individual patients or enrollees. But we've just stated, all three of us have stated today, that we believe it's a family solution. And yet we have a medical system and insurance system that is focused solely on individuals. And yet we sit here saying what we really need to do is wrap our arms around the entire family if we're going to change that culture within the family and change their behaviors.
And the insurance question is an important one, because the health insurance has become something that people rely on. And it has, I think, done damage overall through the years in terms of people staying healthy, because they know they can use their health insurance. I mean, does one use their auto insurance when they have it? Of course not. It's the last thing they want to use. But when you look at health insurance today, it's become a catcher's mitt, so to speak, for people to rely on a means of being able to have someone else care for them. It's certainly felt to be something that they've earned. But at the same time, using up your health insurance versus taking care of yourself personally, individual responsibility is a bridge we have to cross in terms of figuring out who is responsible ultimately for one's health and well-being. It is the individual.
One thing that I think doesn't get discussed enough with regard to the management of chronic health conditions is time, right? We can talk about the money it takes. We can talk about transportation. But very often, if you have a family member diagnosed with a serious chronic health condition, there are a lot of follow-up visits expected. There are a lot of trips to the pharmacy, a lot of, even if you're prescribing things like exercise, there is time. Many lower-income families, in addition to not having a lot of money, are spending more time just getting around to the places they have to be. What can we do about this problem of time required for caring for someone with a chronic health condition in a young family?
Well, I think a lot of it is navigation, mm-hmm. because people are left pretty much with an instruction, but no real map, so to speak, of how to deal with it. And so it's a lot of individual pieces that they have to go through. So the concept of a navigator or an individual who could help you through the process once you have been diagnosed with a chronic disease is working for a lot of organizations now that are putting the navigator in the physician's office when a diagnosis is made or when a condition is focused on. Then the navigator begins to help the person get from point A to point B. It's like the travel agent of healthcare, which is a concept we should think about, not just for adults but for children, because there are too many vertical pieces and the time is a critical issue. And if it were coordinated through a process like getting from point A to point B to point C in a way that people just knew they could show up there because an appointment was made, a time was set, and someone that they were to see was available, it will make a huge difference. And that's on the horizon.
I think there's also some wonderful models that are created here in the city for us to look at. And one of those would be the model created by St. Philip's School in Dallas. And one of the things that they have is a little healthcare facility on site so that they can actually see the children while they're at school. So they can just bring them down the hall and they can get medical attention. They've started working with them on aquaponic farms and helping them learn how to grow fresh fruits and vegetables and what to do with them. And there's, again, all kinds of studies that indicate if children are out there gardening, believe it or not, they actually eat those vegetables because it's something that they see and they've had a hand in. So there's some great models out there for us to use and to build on. So it doesn't have to be a single solution, but we can take what's working in this city and magnify that and spread that word. And as Peter says, the more people we have engaged in that, the more likely we are to be successful as an entire community. But I also want to point out that even though the problems are most severe in the South, it's not about being poor. There's a lot of overweight, obese, and ill people that have a lot of money as well. So it's a whole community effort.
We're speaking this hour with Rita Kirk of the McGuire Center, Peter Roberts of Children's Health System of Texas, and Douglas Hawthorne of Texas Health Resources. All will participate tomorrow in the conference Tipping the Scales for Children, from Ethics to Action to Well-Being. That takes place on the SMU campus. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Summer Youth Program with hands-on workshops in game design, coding, robotics, visual arts, math, and language arts for students entering grades K through 12 at SMU's Plano campus. Online registration is available at smu.edu/summeryouth.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking in advance with three guests of the Tipping the Scales for Children conference taking place tomorrow on the SMU campus. You can still sign up if you'd like to attend at smu.edu/tippingthescales. My guests for the hour are Peter Roberts, President for Population Health and Insurance Services at Children's Health System of Texas. Douglas Hawthorne is founding CEO Emeritus at Texas Health Resources and a member of the McGuire Center Advisory Board. And Rita Kirk is director of the Carrie M. McGuire Center for Ethics and Public Responsibility. If you'd like to join us, call 1-800-933-5372. That's where we find John on the line in Flower Mound. Hi, John.
Hi. Oh, is this, am I on?
You sure are. Go right ahead.
So my question was, for the people who deal with insurance, are there ways looking at the new models that would allow physicians the time they need? Right now, it's a pay-for-fee system. A fee-for-service system, and so you don't have time to do preventative care. You don't really have time to have the discussions that you'd like to with your patients about really health preventative measures. And so is there anything in the pipeline to push for a system that would actually reward outcomes-based and wouldn't be time-based?
John, I think you're certainly right on target as we work with the insurance carriers to move away from just paying after the fact and talk more about prospective activities. We're seeing some interest on the part of the insurance carriers to remunerate physicians for figuring out why someone gets sick or why they are injured rather than just diagnosing and treating them. So with time, I think we will see some change in the reimbursement methodology where there can be more dialogue with an individual about their well-being and truly their health, not just their sickness. It will take some testing, I think, with some of the carriers, but I think from an economic standpoint, it makes sense to figure out up front why someone gets a disease and then keeping them well rather than just always doing it after the fact. So you're right on target with your idea.
I think another dimension of this is we're not using all the resources that are available to us. So we're putting too much pressure on the medical care delivery system to be all things to all people. It's not reasonable and not possible. However, if we can begin to integrate the community service agencies and the medical establishment, now suddenly we're dividing up the work and we're actually working in a more collaborative fashion rather than independently.
In terms of the issue of childhood overweight and obesity, my understanding of the science is that it is much easier to stay in control of your weight if you've never been overweight in the first place. So what do we do to support the health of children who are okay right now but might be at risk of excessive weight gain down the line?
Well, I think that we have to build in habits and behaviors and attitudes that are different than what we see now. And I think the only way we're going to do that is we've got to meet the children and the families where they work, where they play, where they pray, where they study. It's not enough to only interact with them when they come into a hospital or a physician's office. We have to be out in the community, as both Doug and Rita have said. And that's, I think, a big part of this conference. You know, to me, one of the most exciting parts of this conference is that we're not just spending one day together. This is actually the kickoff for a movement. We will be asking, and I know that we're going to get a lot of volunteers from the audience tomorrow, to join us in a multi-sector initiative focused on healthy children and healthy families. And so we'll be back to you a year from now and then 2 years from now with what have we accomplished. So how have we reduced some of those statistics that you cited earlier? And that, to me, will be the most exciting part. So I would encourage people, show up and join the team and become a part of this movement that we're going to start tomorrow.
And that includes everybody from nonprofit organizations to parents and teachers and certainly PTA members that want to come out and figure out how to do this. You know, just a little over 50 years ago, Mayor J. Eric Johnson here in Dallas put together a committee that was called Goals for Dallas, and they had all kinds of things that they wanted to improve. It's how we got DFW Airport. It's how we did a lot of things to improve the city that we're in. And what I loved about it is that it was like a 30 to 50-year plan. They didn't presume then that we were going to solve all problems tomorrow, and we're certainly not going to solve all problems tomorrow either. But there are a lot of people in this community who've just given up hope. And I think one of the things that needs to be a message from this show and from the conference, there is hope. And we know what we can do to make this a better city. But we need to get some grit together here. We need to start standing elbow to elbow and be really excited about the chance we can make life better for kids. And it's our obligation to do that.
What works to encourage children themselves to feel empowered to take care of their own health?
Working with other children. So children can be first-generation change makers in a family. You think about all of us as adults and what habits we've changed because of our children. And we can all point to at least a couple of them. I think getting children to, as we said earlier, to feel in charge and feel that they can make a difference is going to be what we need. The movement has to start from the ground up.
And it's education, for sure. And it's not just education at home. It is in schools, in churches, and other places. You notice in Peter's title, he has the term population. it's becoming very commonplace now that we talk about population health rather than just a specific diagnosis of a certain disease or sickness or injury. And so the opportunity to answer your question is we need to get into the populations of those that are well. So we begin to figure out how they stay well and don't move into this area of obesity because we've left them. And so it's a constant, I think, flow of information, a constant continuum of people working together on the population of not just the sick, but certainly of those who are well.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. You can also email us at think@kera.org. Dean in Plano writes, I hear the issues before us are 40% to 60% psychological, but I didn't hear anything about psychological therapy or support. What is the disconnect?
Well, I think if you looked at statistics today, 25% to 30% of the people who present in a hospital emergency room come with a physical situation, but they also bring a behavioral health issue, which is not dealt with. For the most part, you come in with a physical ailment, but behind that are behavioral health issues. So it is a huge gap in our healthcare delivery system across this country, and it does play into that whole sphere of well-being. Because if you are having behavioral issues, then there's something wrong psychologically where there may not be friends or care or love in a situation. So it's there. But as we talk about this larger element of well-being, it begins to bring those pieces together beyond just the element of basic health.
And I hope the caller will be there because Michelle Kinder with the Momentous Institute is going to be there as one of our speakers tomorrow, and she can certainly address that question in some detail.
There is a public school in the heart of pretty much every neighborhood full of young children, and it would seem in some ways like the ideal central location to provide some of these services. On the other hand, we really ask our schools to do a lot already. So what kinds of relationships can be built between partner organizations and schools whose primary function is to educate children, but which, you know, realistically do a lot more than that?
Sure. Well, there are organizations, Children's Health and Parkland are two of those, who are working with schools to make sure that there is medical services available throughout the day. Either direct with a nurse in the school or through telehealth or telemedicine. And we're having really great luck with actually keeping kids in school and then keeping mom at work, and then a prescription can be called in with the parent's permission so that mom can pick it up at the end of the day. I think you're exactly correct. We've got to figure out how to integrate that community agency or school and the medical system to a much greater extent than we are now.
And you think about, you know, one of the most critical elements of one's well-being is nutrition. And think about the schools in terms of what could they do to revamp, relook, reexamine that opportunity for food and drink for kids at school. And as we'll hear from Dr. Cooper, it is getting some exercise. You put those two elements together, it has a huge difference in terms of one's ability to also think and to learn. And so it is going to take, I think, the public schools and the private schools continuing to look at how can we work together to advance some of these issues that seem to be pulling us back.
To what extent is lobbying a function of what this group might do?
It's a big function, I think. You know, my discussions with legislators is that they would be delighted to put forward any bill or motion that they thought, one, the public was really behind, and two, that they thought would make a difference. But, you know, you talk about public schools having to be in charge of everything. How is a legislator supposed to know how to solve all of the problems of a community unless the community is very specific about the kinds of things that we want them to do? So we'll be talking a lot. I know Dr. Cooper is certainly going to be talking a lot about the fitness gram and trying to get that as a program inculcated in all of the school systems. We'll see a lot of other opportunities as well for us to join forces. And if nothing else, if we just connect with each other and say, mobilize your groups and let's get them behind these people who want to support children, that'll be a problem that we can address starting tomorrow.
Yeah. If we don't start, we won't finish. So we have to get going. And I think we have to bring our legislators and politicians into the conversation. Because they do have the opportunity as communitarians, people who really are responsible for some of the things that happen in our communities in terms of improvements, to be a part of the conversation and to understand. Now, it's going to take statistics. And when we talk about prevention and wellness, that's proactivity. People focus on reactivity, which is, you know, more hospitals, more beds, more technology. That's important, but it's not the centerpiece that we need to continue to focus on as we think about how do we keep people out of the most expensive place to get health care in America, which is an emergency room or an ICU. And so, as you can tell, I've converted to a degree from through my years to see that we're seeing the same people for the same reasons time and time again in our hospitals and health systems. And it is not a sustainable system. A politician ought to understand that and hear that and say, so what's the solution? And the solution is keeping people well.
Peter Roberts, what do you see as the most important signs that there's reason to be optimistic that this can happen?
So the Health and Wellness Alliance decided 4 years ago that we would focus on asthma and about 75 organizations. We did so because asthma is the most common diagnosis both in the emergency room as well as in the hospital itself. And there are a lot of people who said, you know, you're never going to change anything because it's all about the environment and the air and there's only so much we can do. And through a series of initiatives, and again, that's a really important concept, it's about collective impact. So it's, as Doug and Rita have said, it's about taking all those individual initiatives, all good, doing good things, and focusing them on a single issue or a single population. And we did make a difference. We actually can tell you now the data, as Doug talked about, over that four-year period, we reduced the percent of emergency room visits for children with asthma in Dallas County by 50%. So on an annual basis, there are 1,200 fewer visits a year for those kids. Now think what that means for mom staying in school, or mom staying at work, for kids staying in school. It also amounts to about $500,000 a year in cost reduction. So that one small thing made a huge difference.
Peter Roberts is president for Population Health and Insurance Services at Children's Health System of Texas. Doug Hawthorne is founding CEO Emeritus of Texas Health Resources and a member of the McGuire Center Advisory Board. Rita Kirk is director of the McGuire Center for Ethics and Public Responsibility at SMU. You can sign up for Tipping the Scales for Children, From Ethics to Action to Well-Being at smu.edu/tippingthescales. It's been wonderful to have all of you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Our executive producer is Jeff Whittington. I'm on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think, and the show's email address is think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.